My name is Matt Keller. I am the lead pastor of Next Level Church in Fort Myers, Florida. And we are a seven-year-old church plant. And I'll tell you more of our story here in a minute. Let me introduce to you one of my closest friends in all of the world and our associate pastor. He has been with us from the very beginning of Next Level Church when we moved 7 years ago from Indiana to Fort Myers. Mike Ash threw his stuff on the back of our moving truck. And I am forever grateful for a guy who has lifted up my arms for 7 years. So this is Mike Ash, our associate pastor.
So here's what we're going to do. We have some of these footballs. We have six of them we want to throw out, but we're not just going to throw them out to you. We have a little bit of competition, not really competition, but we're going to ask you some questions, and it'll determine if you get a football. First of all, who planted a church in the last month? We're trying to find the newest one.
The newest church plant.
Anybody?
Newest church plant.
All right, last 2 months. Trying to make it, John.
John,
okay,
anybody else?
What are you guys' dates?
Well, when was your launch date? March 1st.
He wins.
What was yours? Woo! All right, here you go. Foam football coming to you. Which, by the way, you guys, in the foyer tonight before the Ed Young session, be there because we're going to get nutty with like 50 footballs. It's going to be unbelievable. Next one.
All right, longest running. Who's been around? Is anybody a part of a church that's been around more than like 10 years? Anybody?
You know what?
I'm just going to throw it right here, and we're not going to go through the whole thing.
All right. Next one. Here we go. Longest portable church.
Who's been a portable church more than 5 years?
5 years more
okay,
than portable.
More than 6 years. 7 years. 8 years. Good night,
okay.
Nancy.
Eight. How long?
8 years.
What city? That is so awesome. Okay, ready? Longest portable. Go deep. Here we go. Around the pole. Oh, I'm going to learn how to throw this.
All right.
Next one.
In the last 6 months, has anyone had no AC or no heat in their building that they're running? Here we go. We got any more?
Right here.
Okay, first
what
name.
Happened?
We'll get first.
Dude, that has totally happened to us. You had no AC or no heat. Oh, that's so awesome. It's like, let's just worship the Lord. What?
Yeah, I think he wins. You win a football.
Here's one. Who has ever been yelled at by a principal, vice principal, or janitor, or teacher? The most recent being yelled at, scolded, made to feel like a little schoolgirl, scolded by a janitor, like in the last month? Anybody in the last month?
Man, you're...
Right there, that guy right here. Here you go.
You're having a bad month.
Seriously. All right.
All right, anyone, okay, how many times moving locations in the last, has anyone moved locations more than 5 times?
Yeah.
Good night.
How many? You lost track.
Here you go. Anytime you're portable.
Wow,
in a
wow.
And then you need a
stress ball.
Yeah, you move to a building and then you go portable again for 3 years.
There you go. God bless you. That's awesome.
You're gonna
well, the reason we're throwing out
that.
Footballs is because, as I mentioned in the announcement, little dealio at the end of Chris's session, we just released our first book. It's called The Up the Middle Church. And it is our story of so many of the lessons that we've learned on doing church up the middle. And let us just kind of start for a couple of minutes by telling you our story. I traveled nationally for a small fellowship of about 150 churches nationwide based out of the Midwest for 3 years. And so my wife and I would spend 45 weeks a year traveling in and out of a different church, a different part of the country every single week, speaking to different churches, speaking about next generation stuff and how the Church of Jesus Christ is changing from one generation to the next, all of that. When God resurrected a dream for us to leave our only home we had ever known in Indiana and move 1,300 miles away to Fort Myers, Florida to start a church. And so I came from, it was a small pond, but I was a big fish in a small pond. And so at the ripe old age of 26, and my wife was 24, we moved from Indiana, loaded up a Ryder truck with two guys with us. Mike, who is here, still with us today, and another guy named Dave, who since moved to Nashville, Tennessee. But we moved and didn't have a clue. We had a big vision to see God do something great in our city, but absolutely no clue on how to do that. And so I'll be honest with you, when we arrived in Fort Myers, I really thought within the first 6, 9, 10, 12 months, by the time we turned a year old, I really thought we'd have 200-300 people, you know, in our church. And came in not with these humongous expectations, but came in with expectations saying, you know, I think it's going to gain traction. In our first Sunday, when we moved, we had four of us. We had our then 18-month-old son, and then another couple who had moved down from Pennsylvania to join our launch team with us. And when we moved there, we had $9,200. That was it. We didn't know about the ark. We didn't know that church planting could be done more effectively. We just knew God had given us a big vision for that region of the country. And so we moved to Fort Myers in January of 2002, and we're like, you know, we had read some books, and we had heard that you needed a launch team. And we're going, well, where in the world do you get a launch team? Because that would be awesome. So we started a Bible study on Tuesday nights at a coffee shop.
Well, and the great thing about a launch team is, where do you get them from? We weren't sure, so we made up our own little invitations.
They were horrible.
Yeah, and we went everywhere and invited people. And the first week, you know, we have this Bible study at a coffee shop, and nobody showed up. And we're like, that's okay. I mean, it's the first week, you know, probably people just miss it or they forgot what night it was. But the next week, we're walking around, we're inviting everybody. And we're those guys who are walking through Walmart at like 10:30 at night, inviting you to church. You know how like that weird guy that you try to avoid? I'm like, hey, do you want to come to a church? It's like, what?
Well, and here's the thing. People would be like, yeah, yeah, that sounds cool. Well, in our minds, we heard them say, yes, we want to be elders.
Promise.
In their minds, what they were saying was, not a chance. Get away from me, creepy guys. So anyway, so the first 2 weeks in the coffee shop, nobody showed up. And it was just the four of us. And, of course, everybody from up north is calling us going, how's the start of Next Level Church?
Because he was the national youth director. So they're like, how's it going?
Like, well,
no one's coming.
Praise the Lord, brother. You know, no one. So it wasn't until week three that the first couple actually showed up. And it's a funny story because we were in the coffee shop hanging out with the barista because that's what you do. And they agreed to stay open past seven for us. And so I'm just standing there talking to the barista and I see this couple come in. And so I just get out of the way because this is what has happened the last 2 weeks. People come in to get coffee before the coffee shop closes. They're not here for us. And so I'm like, oh, here, go ahead. And the lady looks at me. She goes, oh, well, actually, we're here for church. And there were two other small groups from other churches around the city that met in that coffee shop on other nights. And so, no lie, the first thing in my mind was, oh, these poor people, they came on the wrong night. And then I'm like, wait, they're here for us. But here's the thing, you can't freak out on these people. These are the only people who have ever come to your church. But what do you say? You're just like, hey, what's going on? And we're all looking at each other going, people can't. I mean, we're like, what in the world? So we added that couple. The next Tuesday night, another couple came. So when we started our church, we launched our church in the movie theater, which, cool story on that, Sarah and I went out on a date, and Mike and Dave ended up watching our then 18-month-old son, so she and I could have a date night. And we're sitting in the top of this movie theater, and as we're sitting there waiting for the movie to start, I turned to my wife, and I said, this would be a great place for a church. And so we went and met with the manager there. And within 48 hours, they said, man, we'd love to have you. And so we launched our church on Mother's Day 2002, which we later found out once we hooked up with the Ark, that Mother's Day is like the absolute worst time ever to start a church. Again, information that would have been helpful then. But we didn't know that. So anyway, so we started a church on Mother's Day. We had 35 people. You guys, we pieced together just the worst ever, most horrible black and white postcards that are the three that are perforated that you run on a copy machine.
And the
that
way
was our mail out.
And the way that we got addresses is we drove up and down streets writing down addresses.
We did. Mike would drive and he'd be like, 14041, 14043. I'm like, slow the heck down.
And we put an ad in a newspaper, and when you put an ad in a newspaper, at least for us, we advertised to people who wouldn't like our church. So that was awesome the first few
right.
weeks.
If you found us in the religious section, we're probably not the church for you. But it's okay. We only had to like sell three kids. Needs to place an ad in our paper. So anyway, so we launched our church on Mother's Day. Stop getting me distracted. 2002, launched our church. We had 35 people the first Sunday. And it could have been 3,000. I mean, we were just like, whoa. The next Sunday we had 19, which we, again, later found out from the Ark, thank you very much, that you'll usually have half the next Sunday. That had been information good to know before we started to jump in front of trains and other moving objects. But anyway, we were fine. So we settled in through the summer then. We grew to a solid 50. I remember the Sunday we broke 51, and it was like, yeah, 51, 51. That fall we did like this fall push kickoff thing. And then in January of 2003, when our church was 9 months old, I got introduced to a guy named Randy Bazette, who is one of the lead team members of the Ark. And I drove up to Bradenton. They were planting their church about 90 minutes north of us. And so I drove up and had one of those three-hour lunches where at the end of the time, you're like, no, I swear we were separated at birth. Everything we had been feeling in our heart concerning what a church could and should look like, he was saying. And at the end of the lunch, he just looked at me and he said, man, listen, you got to meet my friends. And so the next month in February, I flew out to Little Rock, Arkansas, and was a part of the last small ARC meeting and got in on it. And for the last 6 years, we have been serving the ARC, and we said, listen, if there's a group of people who are willing to get behind the Matt and Sarah Kellers of the world, we got to be a part of that. So it has been our privilege to be a part of the ARC. It's been a privilege to see all of that happen. This is my wife over here leaning against the wall. This is my wife, Sarah. And that's our executive pastor standing next to her, Scott Drummond. And Scott was a senior pastor for 11 years in Columbus, Ohio, resigned his church 2 years ago and joined our staff as our executive pastor. And Will Hutcherson is our youth pastor. He is in the back as well. And so I wanted to make sure that you guys know who our team is and that we're available for you. So anyway, we did 4 years in the movie theater and grew our church to about 300 people in the movie theater. And then we moved from a movie theater to a high school, a brand new 900-seat auditorium, $40 million building that the state of Florida built for us. And all we have to do is let them have school in there Monday to Friday. It's a beautiful deal. So we moved 3 years ago on Easter 2006 to the high school. And again, really thinking, man, this is going to be a long bomb. And we slowly and steadily grew. So our story is not one of these long bomb stories where you hear about and it's like, we didn't even put up a sign and 50 million people came. It's like, that's not us. That's not us. Our story is we know what it is to be a church planter who's got four people in a coffee shop. We know what it is to be church planters who have 44 people, 144 people, 344 people, 744 people, or 1,044 people. That's our story. We're one yard at a time church planters. And the reality is the vast majority of church plants, 98% of church plants in America today, are not long bombs. They're up the middle. And that's us. And so here's the reality for us. We understand that every one of us want to get to the next level, that we're coaching about 30 churches across the country right now, helping them break through, get to their next level. And what we're discovering is church growth actually happens in phases. And the hardest phase of church growth to break is the 100 barrier. That most churches, and maybe you're in that zone where you're stalled out right about 100, 130, that is the hardest growth barrier to break. Now, the good news is if you can break through the 130 barrier, where you'll end up next is right in that 250 or 300 that your church will just boom all the way up. Then from 250 to 300, the next logical growth barrier is 400. That's a hard barrier to break. A lot of churches get stuck there because 400, things begin to change, which is what we're going to talk about again. Then from that 400 to 500, then the next rough barrier to break through is that 750 or 800 barrier. And for us, the last 18 months, we've been trying really, really hard to break through that 800 barrier, and the economy hasn't helped us. And Fort Myers, Southwest Florida, is like the number one foreclosure capital of the world, unemployment 12.5%. And so in the last year, we've said goodbye to almost 200 people in our church who have left the area because of jobs. Now, the good news is our church continues to grow, so we're replacing them hopefully as fast as they're leaving. And that's the good news. But we've been stuck at that 800 barrier. And again, church growth experts will tell us that the hardest barrier to break through is the 100-130 barrier. The second hardest barrier to break through is the 800 barrier. But once you do, prayerfully, come on somebody, you bounce up to that 1,000, 1,100, 1,200 mark. And then beyond that, you're going to have to ask somebody else. We don't know. But what we do know is we're believing to stay above 800. So anyway, couple of myths about breaking through these growth barriers. Couple of myths. The first one is this. Making the jump does not happen by doing more of the same. We got to know this. Listen, there's this thing inside of us that wants to so believe that if we'll just work harder doing more of the same stuff, that growth will be automatic. But the reality is, and again, as we work with churches all across the country now, what we're discovering is more of the same is not going to yield more results. There's this law of diminishing return thing. So the first myth is that making the jump doesn't happen by doing more of the same. That church growth is not linear. It's not a straight line. We love to think of it in terms of a straight line. The reality is church growth is actually an S-curve, a series of S-curves. And every growth phase has five components to that S-curve, which I won't even talk about in this session. But then here's the key. In order for a church to make the jump from one S-curve to the next, it doesn't require more of the same. It actually requires a jumping of the tracks. And when a church jumps the tracks, then and only then will it be able to effectively grow past that growth barrier and sustain it long term. And we want to show you guys, help you guys, and unpack about six what we're calling invisible keys. Things that you look on and you go, oh, I should have known that. It's like watching a movie, and it's a suspense movie, and you sit there for 2 hours, and you're like, what am I missing? What am I missing? What am I missing? What am I missing? Anybody ever felt that way about your church? You just look on, and you're like, what am I missing? What am I missing? And then like the last 2 minutes of the movie, they actually fill in all the pieces and you go, oh, the whole movie makes sense. Hopefully the next few minutes in here, as we unpack these six invisible keys to making the jump and jumping the tracks from one S-curve to the next, will be that revelation for some of us where we can go, that's it. That was a key that I was missing. That was a component that it may just seem simple and logical, but man, that's a strategy for me. Because see, here's the reality. What got you here won't get you there. This, if we've learned one thing in making the jump over the last 7 years and helping other churches to make the jump and break through these growth barriers, what we have learned is what got you here won't get you there. And so we want to try and unpack some of those invisible keys. So how do we do that? Let me throw some of these at you. There's six invisible keys that Mike and I want to talk about this afternoon, and then open it up for a little bit of Q&A. Number one is this. I would say this. You got to combat complacency. You've got to combat complacency. See, when a church lives at a certain growth level for too long, a subtle mindset begins to set in to the people of the church. And here's the mindset. This must be who we are. This just must be it. This is it. I guess we're doing what the pastor wants us to do. I guess we're fulfilling the vision that when a church stalls out and it stays underneath a growth barrier too long, it's like there's this subtle rocking back on your heels. You know, when you play defense, you play offense, you're on the balls of your feet. But there's this thing that happens in our people subconsciously that when we plateau, when we level off for too long, people start to rock back on their heels and they go, okay, well, this is good. This is good.
Yeah, and what happens is people begin to define your church as the size it is.
Yeah.
And they say, well, I guess if we've been this way for this long, this is who we are. And so no one's trying to change it. No one's trying to do anything. No one's trying to move forward because they've kind of rocked back and thought, I guess this is just how Next Level Church, this is just how our church is now. Because they begin to define the church based on the size that you're at that time.
And a couple of mindsets begin to set in if you're writing stuff down. The first mindset that begins to set into our people is a survival equals success mentality. Anybody ever encountered that? Like in the setup and teardown reality of your church? That there's this, well, we're surviving. Well, we haven't gone out of business yet. And if we're not careful, this complacency, this mindset can set in where our people start to believe, well, surviving is success. I mean, we didn't die. Praise the Lord, we're not dead yet type of a thing. There's this complacency thing. A second mindset that begins to creep in is this. We are family. And this is one of the number one reasons. Now, again, watch this, because this is a little tricky that so many churches, and particularly so many of us who have found ourselves at that place in that family zone where we're at 100, 130 people, people look around, and here's why this complacency thing sets in. They go, we're happy. We love each other. We all know each other. We're just one big happy family. Everything gets done. What's the problem? The problem is there are still way too many people outside of the four walls of our church who are lost and are going to hell. But see, our people can start to just rock back on their heels and just get complacent and go, what? We're not dead. We're surviving. We're okay. So what do we do? What do we do? Well, keeping with the football lingo, I guess, here's what we do. You got to move the chains. You got to move the chains. You got to start setting up new first downs. Now, here's what moving the chains is not. Moving the chains is not having a friend day and trying to get 50 new visitors in one day, necessarily. This is moving the chains is not numerical as much as it is a mindset. How do we move the chains? We talk about it. Chapter 14 of the book, we actually unpack some things. Because, see, what you've got to push against is you don't need more people. You need a different mindset in your church people. You've got to start allowing your church people to recognize that everything's got to change. That what got them here won't get them there. The very thing they love about their church right now is probably the very thing that's going to have to change. Does that make sense? So we got to move those chains. So combating complacency is so huge in making that jump.
So the second thing to making the jump is begin downloading DNA. Basically, what we talk about a lot with church planters is a lot of times the senior leader or the senior pastor in a church, you know how it's supposed to look. You know how it's supposed to feel. You know the energy it's supposed to have. When a sign's set out this way, you just understand how that works. Well, you have to make sure that people get in your head and explain the why behind the what. Because what'll happen is, especially as a senior leader, when you go and plant a church, is if you can get all of that vision and what you see in your mind in someone else's mind, what that's going to do is that's going to free them up to make decisions and free you up to trust someone so that you can then go and make decisions and move forward and do whatever you have to do. I know that for us in our church, it's been pretty big because he's been able to download DNA. And okay, when we move a sign, it's not, hey, Mike, I need you to move that sign over there. It's, hey, we're going to move that sign. And the reason why we need to angle it this way is because, and he explains it to me. And then, hey, we need to make it look this way. Or when we deal with a problem, this is why we dealt with it a certain way. And when we do that, I understand the picture in his head more clearly. So the next time when I need to make a decision or move forward or do something, he's not going, man, I wonder if Mike's just like screwing that whole thing up or if he's messing that up or not. He can trust. No, Mike understands the picture in my head. And so now he's more freed up. John Maxwell says there are connectors and there are climbers. Well, in an organization, a lot of times you need a connector to kind of connect and pastor people and be with people so that the main visionary can be the climber and move forward and just move forward with vision and just go. Well, you need someone who's pastoring people and doing some of the things behind the scenes.
And the key to that is you've got to get those key leaders around you to see the picture that you see in your head for your church. We often use the illustration of a sunset. That if we all closed our eyes right here, which we're not going to do because it's after lunch and we probably all fall asleep. But if we all closed our eyes and I told you to picture a sunset, guess what? Every single one of us we'd all see a sunset. We'd all see some major components together. But the reality is every one of us would see a different picture of that sunset in our head. Now, Mike and I, we'd probably see Fort Myers Beach, and we'd see a pier, and we'd see the Gulf of Mexico. Somebody else who lives in California, they're going to see the Pacific Ocean. Somebody else who lives in the mountains is going to see a different picture of the sunset. Here's the thing. As a senior pastor, as the lead pastor of your church, God has placed a specific picture of the sunset in your mind that he is calling you and your church to paint on the canvas of your community. Here's the problem. We, as the lead pastor, don't have any of the brushes. You know who holds the brushes? The people in our church. It is our job as the senior leader to constantly be downloading that DNA, that culture, that picture that we see. So it's my job to look at the guys like Mike, like Scott, like other team members on our team and other key leaders in our church and be able to say to them, no, I see more orange in the sunset. No, I see more yellow in the sunset. I see more purple in the sunset. No, move the sun over here. There's some clouds rolling in over here. That is a constant job for me as the senior leader of our organization to constantly be putting that picture of the sunset in. Why? Because the minute these guys can see the sunset like I see it, they'll make decisions like I make decisions. So the key here is I don't need these guys to make decisions like I do because I am the best or because my way is the best. I need them to think like I see and see that sunset because I see it first. As a senior leader, God, I wish it wasn't so. I wish he just put the same picture of the sunset in all of our minds. Unfortunately, apparently, God doesn't do that. He puts it in the heart of one guy, and then it's my job to download that into others. A lot of people ask us, you know, how did you grow to 200 people within, you know, 18 or 19 months, whatever that was. I'll say this. Looking back on our journey, I think one of the biggest keys to our being able to make those jumps and to jump those S-curves over the years was having someone like a Mike Ash around me who got it, and my wife as well, that Mike could be that pastoral extension of me. Sarah could be that administrative extension of that vision that I saw, the picture of the sunset in my heart. We hosted last summer an event at our church called Access Granted for church planters trying to make the jump. And every one of them throughout the weekend looked at us and they said, where do we get a Mike? And I said, you know what? Here's the problem. You don't get a mic. You grow a mic. And the best time to grow a mic is 7 years ago. The second best time to grow a mic is today. So if I could encourage you guys to do anything, it would be start looking for those leaders around you.
So let's talk about three ways to reproduce DNA, three ways that Matt's been really great at and we've been trying to do with all our leaders. Number one, spend time with your leaders. It seems obvious, but you just got to spend time with them. And I think the question, if you don't have any, I don't have any staff. Well, who are the 4 to 6 people that you would consider staff level? If money wasn't an object, who are those 4 to 6 people? And then begin building in weekly meetings to talk about leadership and talk about culture. Just meet with them, spend time with them, talk through what you're doing. The second one is read books together. Read a book together and tell them, hey, I want you to outline or underline everything that sticks out to you. We're going to talk about it. Get your team together once a week and talk about it. And what it's going to do is, as they tell you what they underline, it is going to give you a picture into how they see the sunset. And then you can address that as they talk about it. And it gives you the opportunity as the leader to say, this is what I underlined and this is why I underlined it.
We actually have a lot of churches across the country now, which is totally cool for us. Matter of fact, somebody just today in the hallway came up to me last hour and stopped me and said, hey, our whole church staff is going through your book a chapter at a time together, and I just wanted to tell you thanks and how much it's changing us. So we actually have a whole table full of books back there, and we have team packs. We brought them just because we know that there's power in exactly what you're saying in terms of that download DNA thing. Reading books together, man, that shaped us in the early days of our church.
Yeah, and if you're an up-the-middle church, that really is just a ridiculously good book to take a team through and help walk them through some of that. The third one is focus on the why behind the what and how, kind of like what I talked about. Don't just make changes. Don't just give directives. Don't talk about the what of ministry. And don't give direction in that way. Explain the why.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times what will happen is if you explain the what and you talk about how important the what is and it's what and it's what, well, if it's determined by the why, eventually the what's going to have to change.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to touch the what, all the people that you've taught the what is going to defend the what. And we've always had name tags. We don't want to get rid of name tags. This is just what we do. We've always had coffee and we've always had donuts. Well, the why is we just want everybody to hang out before service. The why is not coffee and donuts. But if you don't explain the why, everyone defends the what and everyone gets offended when you cancel coffee and donuts or do something like that. So you got to unpack the why. This is why we have coffee and donuts and this is why it's most important. And if coffee and donuts stop working for the why, we'll just cut them. Because the most important thing is the why.
That's right.
And your leaders have to understand the why behind the what. And as a leader, you have to take the extra 15 or 20 seconds. And when you ask them, hey, can you move the way this looks? And this sound, it just didn't sound right. And the lighting in here just isn't right. You have to explain, and this is why it doesn't sound right. This is why it doesn't look right. So they can see that picture even more clearly in your mind.
So number one, combat complacency, that rocking back on the heels thing. Number two, that downloading DNA thing is huge because as we download DNA into the leaders around us, they have the ability to multiply our influence and make decisions like we make decisions. Again, not because we do it best, but because we see it first. Number three, we got to shift our staff. Every time a church makes the jump, it happens at Next Level. Through the years, it's happened. It's happening again. It happens in all of the churches that we coach and are in relationship with. Every time we have gone to make the jump, we've had to shift or transition at least one of our key staff members. There was a quote we came across from John Maxwell several years ago when we were early in our church where he said, not everyone is intended to take the entire journey with you. And I'm telling you, in the early days of your church, like that, your launch team, it's like, we're going to be together forever. No, you're not. No. Love you. Love you. Glad you're here. But it's just every time there is a shifting of the staff. In the early days, it's like whosoever will, isn't it? I mean, it is just like, you'll take any, can you fog a mirror? You're an elder. Love ya. Welcome aboard. Want to be pastor. You know, it's just like, you're just whosoever will. But as the church grows, as you make those jumps and your church gets bigger and you want to push through those growth barriers, you've got to shift your staff and shift your thinking from whosoever will to we need you specifically to. Here's a specific job description. Here's a specific detail that we need you to cover. So this isn't just fog a mirror and you're in. This is very specific in terms of this is where we're heading. This is the vision, the picture of the sunset we see. We got to get there.
couple of questions to help determine if you need to shift a staff member, specifically if you need to shift them off your staff and just get them away from you. A few questions. Is there anyone causing you drag? Another one is anyone complicated? Is anyone not growing? Like 2 or 3 years ago, we had a staff member who was probably one of the most complicated guys to be around. And he was on staff, and it was like he was the type of guy, and I don't know if you ever ran into him, and I'm sure you have, like if someone got a new phone, he'd be like, why didn't I get a new phone? And you got the guy, Sarah, who does graphics. She's getting a computer to help her do graphics better. And he's like, why didn't I get a new computer? And like everything, you'd have to manage around him and do all that. And it was such a pain in the neck. And it was so difficult. And we just found ourselves going, you know what? And it was, we kind of talked about it. And I think it's a John Maxwell thing. He says that there are times when it's kind of you drag the person.
Hit the ball and drag Charlie. Remember this? Anybody hear Maxwell say this? Hit the ball, drag Charlie. Hit the ball, drag Charlie. You just want to stop and hit Charlie. Well, it was that kind of a thing. Our church was growing, you know, at this rate, and this guy on our staff was growing at this rate, and the divide was just getting greater and greater between them. And some of you know what I'm talking about. Guess what? He was Mike's best man in his wedding, and we had to fire him.
And if we wouldn't have,
yeah,
our church couldn't have made the jump.
Yeah,
again, you want to work with your best friends. Matt and I've never had a closer friend. I honestly never had a closer, and Scott, and we're, yeah. I mean, we're loving it. But we think outside those doors.
That's right.
There are people who don't understand who Jesus is. So we just, it's a little tricky, and we try to work through it, and we try to do it in the best possible way. And sometimes it like works out, and we're still friends with the people, and sometimes it doesn't work out. But for us, we just said, you know what, sometimes you got to shift that staff member. Because what'll happen and what would have happened if Caleb,
wow,
there's his name,
wow,
would have never made that transition. He's my best friend. What am I supposed to do? I know his name. If we wouldn't let him go, That's awkward.
At least they're
Charlie.
Not taping this and putting it on iTunes.
So he won't be surprised. So if we,
right, because he's not gonna know who we were talking.
What would happen is it's drag the ball, hit Charlie, drag the ball, hit Charlie, or hit drag Charlie, hit the ball, drag Charlie, hit the ball. At some point you hit Charlie, but at other points the other staff wants to hit you.
Yeah, that's right.
So if you don't do
that's
anything
right.
about it, the other staff members are gonna eventually leave, which is a little bit tricky because one of our executive staff is his wife and. A little weird.
Well, let me say this. There is a personal leadership component here for senior leaders. I believe that the size of our churches is directly correlated to our ability to make hard calls. And we work with churches across the country, and we'll walk in, and within 2 hours of spending time with their staff, we'll go, they need to shift their staff in this area or in that area. And if the pastor will do it, the church will grow. And if they won't, it'll stall out. And like Mikey said, there will come a time where the other staff members or key leaders in your church will look on and go, what's the matter with you, senior leader? Why won't you deal with this? Because we're all looking on going, this guy doesn't fit anymore.
And it gets tricky because if you have someone who really believes they can sing and their family's been telling them they can sing and the last church they were the worship leader at and they come in, I mean, it's your job. I mean, this is part of what you have
That's
to
right.
do. You got to sit him down and go, listen, I realize you may have never heard this before. And Matt did this. He sat down with one of the guys and said, but your voice can't carry this. And the guy looked at him and he said, no one's ever told me that before. And it wasn't like his voice was a little off. It was off. It was way off. And he said, no one's ever told me this before. And it was the best thing in the world for this guy. It may not have been the greatest conversation. And it was the hardest conversation in the world for this guy. But at times, you've got to have those hard
That's
conversations
right.
and tell people the truth in love so that they can continue to grow and the church continue to reach lost people.
Number four, embrace new expectations. Every time a church grows to a new growth level, the expectations change of your visitors. A church of 100 can get away with things that a church of 300 or 400 cannot. A church of 500 can get away with things that a church of 2,000 or 1,000 cannot. That there's an excellence factor in that. That there's, and we could give you all kinds of illustrations of that. When our church was really small, we had about 50 people. We did a series, and I came out in this baseball jersey and a hat, and the hat didn't match the team of the jersey. And as I walked out, I had a Cubs hat on and a Rangers jersey, and like this kid in the back yells out of our service, and he's like, "Who are the Chicago Rangers?" Okay, as a church of 50, it's like, okay, I wish you wouldn't have done that, but whatever. When your church grows, here's the thing, your visitors are sitting there and they're like, why is some doofus yelling out in the back? What is going on? Does that make sense? That there's the expectations of your visitors change. And so if you're looking to make that jump and break from one growth level to the next, there's those little excellence things in your church that you've got to start recognizing. How is a first-time visitor looking on? What are their expectations walking in? Because they're completely different as your church grows. Number five.
In larger environments. Mm-hmm. The environments in your church, let's just give you some insight, they're invisible to you. Our churches right now, the churches that we're at, are perfectly designed to handle the amount of people we have. I mean, for most of us, we don't have churches. It's like, man, they're all so empty because we've structured them to be so huge right now. They're perfectly designed for the amount of people that your church is pastoring. And so in order for more people to come in, it just makes sense, although sometimes we don't think about it, our environments just have to be bigger. We have to make room and make room for more people to come in.
Yeah, I mean, they really do get invisible. My wife and I were doing an on-site last year at a church, and they were meeting in a high school, beautiful high school, and they had about 130 people, and we walked in their foyer, and they had coffee and donuts and stuff, and they had one table with their coffee and donuts on it, and it was pushed against a wall. And it was fine, and so she and I were standing there in the foyer kind of watching people interact and doing the deal, and here's the thing. We know that, you know, the vast majority of your people will come in within 8 minutes of the start time of your service. And so she and I looked on, not as a church of 130 that they were, but we looked on and said, if they're going to make the jump and become a church of 250 or 300, how does their foyer need to flow? How does it need to look? And we looked on and we said, it is impossible to get the majority of 250 or 300 people around 1 4-foot table pushed against the wall. How are we going to serve 200 adults donuts from that one table? Move it to the center, make it a circle table, put two stations on each side. Now you can serve 200 people around one table. Do you see what I'm saying? So you've got to be able to get a fresh set of eyes in terms of the environments of your church, because after a while, they just become invisible to you. And we walk in and we're like, what? That's just where the table thing goes. And it's just fine. Not necessarily. Not if you're going to make the jump.
Number six, shift your thinking from family to organization. The root word of organization is to organize. And this is the illustration we like to use when we talk about this. Think of Thanksgiving dinner. If you ever hosted Thanksgiving dinner before, you can host 12 people at your house pretty easy without thinking about it. And everyone just brings something and it's all casual in the start time. What time are we going to eat? Around 2 or 5. You know, it's kind of big there. Well, you invite 50 people. And the way that you approach throwing that Thanksgiving party is completely different. You have 200 people to your house. And if we said, hey, we're coming to Thanksgiving to your house this year, we're going to have 200 people. The way that you think about how to host that is completely different. And it's the same way. It's the same way. It goes from, we're just a family and we're all just hanging out, to, no. There's got to be like double-sided lines. And we've got to, I mean, if we were to have a lunch at our church this Sunday, I mean, we could organize it and be all right. But for this conference yesterday, to have 2,000 people or however many people going through those lines, they're thinking completely different thoughts than the way we're thinking.
The food doesn't change. Same turkey, same mashed potatoes, same dressing. You're serving all of the same food content. But your delivery system begins to change. And for churches that are making the jump, we have to start transitioning from that family mindset of, well, we'll eat around 2, 2:30, whatever, we're good. We all just love each other, to that organization where we say, okay, we got to have three things real quick. I want to throw these at you. Three things that you got to have: systems, structures, and schedules. Systems, structure, and schedule. At Next Level Church, we are huge talking about systems. Everything we do is, it's no longer a personality problem, it's a systems issue. And so that is a phrase you'll hear at Next Level Church all the stinking time. When we look around, okay, if the coffee bar is all messed up, we don't go, oh, that darn lady. No, this isn't a personality thing at all. This is a systems issue. This is a system that broke down. Everything in our life, everything in our church is system-based. So you got to have system, and here's what a system does. A system does three things: predictability, reproducibility, and accountability. Predictability, reproducibility, and accountability. What is that? Guidelines, deadlines, and butts on the line. That's what a system does. In a family, we can get away with just going, well, you know, we're all just good. It'll get done. 2:30, whatever. We're fine. In an organization, we go, no, whose butt's on the line? Guidelines, deadlines, and butts on the line. Predictability, which means when someone comes in, they know what to expect. The number one thing that builds trust in our church people, trust that they can invite their unsaved and unchurched friends, is predictability. Systems create predictability. Reproducibility means that any idiot can do it. We coined a phrase at Next Level. We call it idiify. Everything we do needs to be idiified. You got to bring it all the way down. Put the cookies on the bottom shelf, baby. And so that's what a system does. It makes it reproducible. So interchangeable parts. So that means if coffee bar lady is sick one day, that means that 200 people don't go without coffee that Sunday. There's a system in place that kicks in no matter if coffee bar lady is sick or there or whatever. The quality, the excellence stays up there. And then accountability is whose butt's on the line. At some point, some of your key staff or your paid staff for us, whatever, you know, it's got all the way up. Okay, well, who's in charge of this? Well, a system tells you that. Structure, you got to have structures in place if you're going to make the jump. And here's the reason why, and I'm hurrying so that we can get to the Q&A, because if you've got any questions, we want to be available for that. Structure does this. The new boyfriend who gets invited to Thanksgiving dinner, why does he stand against the wall when everybody else is helping clean up all the plates? Because he doesn't want to get in Aunt Sally's way. Because you know what I'm talking about? Aunt Sally's got her thing, and she's the weird Aunt Sally, and she knows, and she there's a way she does it. And what's the new boyfriend do? It's not that he has a bad heart. It's not that he's standing there going, well, I'm not going to help. I'm a guest here. No, he wants to help. He wants to participate. He wants to be a part of what's happening in the family. The problem is he's looking on going, all of these people are functioning inside a set of unspoken rules right now. And I don't know what the rules are. So rather than try and get in that mix and get all in the way of Aunt Sally, I'm just going to stand over here. And without structure, our new people don't know that there's room for them. And so they walk in and they see everybody tearing down wires and they just kind of stand there. Why? Because they don't know. There's not structure. There's not a place for the new boyfriend in the family system. So we got to create structure. And then the final thing is schedules. Schedules keep people from burnout. We're one of the largest, longest running mobile churches in America now. And I love that. 7 years and we have absolutely zero mobile fatigue. Our people never walk in and go, oh, someday we won't have to do this. When are we getting our own building? Well, we've never heard that. 7 years, never heard that. Never. Never. Number one, I tell my staff, if I ever hear you talk that way, you're fired. But it's just true.
That helps.
Indeed. It's a culture thing. It's a systems issue. And number two, because of schedules. You got to create opportunity for people to not get burnt out. We have systems, structures, and schedules, which makes mobile church really, really easy for 800 people. So that's kind of our little spiel.
And just to let you guys know, again, real quick, we're going to dismiss. We're going to do some question and answers. But we have the book in the back. We take credit card, MasterCard, and Visa, and I think Discover. Although at the beginning, Matt's like, does anybody use Discover? And I use Discover, so shuddy. So there's a book in the back. And also, we are available. Our staff is around. We're hanging out. We're just going to be here for a while. If you guys want to hang out, talk to us. We love this stuff. And then the third one, if you want to be a part, we do coaching communities, which is basically online chatting with a group of church planners. If you're out there and disconnected from people and you want to be a part of that, email us, send us an email. We really, really would love to do whatever we can to help invest in what you guys are doing. Again, this is one of those things that we feel like as a church and as a leadership team, God has just put church planning and church planners in our heart. So huge, and we want to help any way we can. So we're going to do question and answer, but we're going to go ahead, since it's past the time, we're going to dismiss, and if you want to leave, we're going to be okay with that. No one's going to shun you as you leave, but let's pray, and then we'll dismiss, but then we'll also run question and answer as people are hanging out. God, thank you so much for letting us be here and invest in these people, and we ask that you would continue to grow them in a big way. In your name, amen. So if you want to leave, that's cool, but we're going to run around with the microphone.
Any questions that we can answer? Yeah, right here. The books are $14 each. The team packs, if you buy five or more, they're $12 each. And if you buy 10 or more, they're $10 each.
This goes to the larger environment. One, how do you know if there are certain environments that need to grow? And do you need to change the environment? Do all your environments need to be what they need to be at the next level? Like, say you're at the 200 level. Do you need, hey, I know we're not 300, but we need to make every one of these things ready now as if they were 300.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it is, absolutely. I mean, I think you've got to start looking at capacity issues. Our Easter service this year was the largest service we've had in the history of our church. We had 1,203 people in service, and we were averaging before that about 775 or something. And so we saw this humongous influx, and the greatest thing about our Sunday on Easter was not record attendance. The greatest thing was the lesson we learned. We learned that we had capacity issues. We learned that our auditorium had some comfortability things. Craig Rochelle talks about how an auditorium it's movie theater. You know, if you wouldn't sit that close to somebody in a movie, you probably don't want to sit that close to somebody in your church, is how Craig says that. And so for us, we learned that we had capacity issues there. We learned that we had capacity issues in our children's ministry, that, you know, we had 25, you know, toddlers in one little bitty room. And so we said, wow, in order for us to become a church of 1,200, that's not going to work. We're going to have to expand that environment. So it gave us the ability to look on and say, yeah, we need to tweak that. We need to transition that. We need to enlarge that. So my answer would be, yeah, I think you've got to at least have a strategy to, you know, how we're going to track in that direction. Does that make sense? Good question. Other questions, you guys? What can we do to help? Anything?
We're good. Well, we're going to be around hanging out. Again, whatever we can do to help, stop by the table on your way out. Thanks, you guys, for being here today.
Thanks for being
Enjoy
here.
Your break. Your little tags will tell you when the next main session is tonight.